Welcome to Puentes a la Comunidad, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is New Mexico State University Professor of History, Dr. John Hunter, with an update of the Tour of the Nation's Parks as part of the National Park Service Centennial. Thank you for joining me again on Puentes.
It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. Well, your drive has been quite an inspiration, and reading your blog, Driven by History, .blogspot.com. Well, tell me about the last, five, 6 weeks since we last spoke?
I've driven about 7,000 miles to the western part of the country. I'm going up through Utah, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, and back here. And I hit, probably about 20 or so parks during that five-week period.
And did you get to all the parks you wanted to see?
No, I didn't. There's some parks you just have to drive by, even though I wanted to. I drove by Hoover Dam. I wanted to. That's part of a national recreational area. I drove by Narcissa Whitman's park up in Washington. There's just not enough time to hit all the parks that I wanted to.
Then let's talk about the ones you did and what really touched you about some of them.
For the historical parks, one of the things that really touched me, besides going to the place where history actually happened, as a historian, it doesn't get any better than that, is that the national parks preserve some sites of conscience, preserve places where Japanese Americans were interned during World War II, preserve the places where Native American massacres happened. So I think it was really important to go to those parks, to go to those places where we don't quite live up to our ideals as a nation, and we commemorate that. We don't hide it. We say, this was a failing. So I think that's important. But then also I went to some wonderful places like where Lewis and Clark spent the winter at the mouth of the Columbia River in 1805-1806 between Washington and Oregon. And the Columbia River is just massive. It's a huge river that goes right into the ocean there. And there's a recreation of the fort that they built in 1805. There's costumed interpreters there pretending to be part of the Corps of Discovery. That was a really special weekend that I spent at the mouth of the Columbia River.
Well, I'm sure there are some of the parks that you saw that have changed to possibly you'd been to years before.
You know, a lot of these parks are new for me. I went to Yosemite, I've never been there before. Went to Redwoods, never been there before. So actually, this is a kind of a voyage of discovery for me as well.
In the blog, you talked about the Grand Canyon. What was so awesome about that?
I walked across about a half mile from the campground, just across. I kind of got lost. But I was walking towards the Grand Canyon, and when I got up to the edge there, it literally took my breath away. I mean, it's such a huge chasm in the middle of the landscape. It was like, oh my gosh, and I've been to the Grand Canyon before. This wasn't a new experience, but it did take my breath away. And just the light on all of the different colors of the earth, I mean, that was just really special. There were a lot of people there. But my experience is if you get a half mile away from the visitor center or the parking lots, people aren't traveling, they aren't hiking around that much. So it's kind of nice to get out at Yosemite or Grand Canyon, at Redwoods, and hike around, and you can actually get away from the crowds pretty quickly.
Did you see that there was less people going out camping, or was there a reason for that?
No, I think people are just wedded to their cars. I mean, no, this was a banner year. They're breaking records everywhere across the national parks because of the centenary. They're estimated to have 7 million visitors at Grand Canyon this year, where usually a couple years ago it was 4 or 5 million a year. So it's a banner year for visitation at the parks, but still people kind of stay near the visitor center, near their cars. And when I went out and hiked for 4 hours during the, you know, through the Redwoods in Northern California, I only saw a handful of people on the trails, so it's easy to get away.
Well, the sequoias, you said there was something quite fascinating, or that they could have almost had a fire?
The whole western slope of the Sierra Nevada is dotted with dead trees. The LA Times had an article when I was out there that said that they estimate 20 million trees died since October in the Sierra Nevadas. So I'm driving around seeing all these brown trees, and I'm worried that wildfires could sweep through Yosemite, Kings Canyon, Sequoia, and burn the trees that have been around for 500, 700, even 1,000 years or more. I talked to a ranger about this, and she looked at me and said, "We might be the last generation that sees sequoias."
So what would you inspire people to do, knowing that?
Look at global climate change. Part of this is the drought that has really hit California hard, but it's hit us as well. And support our national parks in their stewardship of our natural and historic resources. One of the wonderful things as I go around is that they're just incredibly beautiful places that are preserved by the parks. There's incredibly important historical places that that preserve the events that really gave shape to our country.
On the blog, something I found fascinating, you wrote about the Grand Canyon, that it was almost closed when you got there?
Yeah. I went in to have a nice steak dinner at the El Tovar, the iconic lodge there, and I was given this sheet of paper with the menu saying that there was a level 2 water emergency. The pump that had pumped water up from the north rim and then up the south rim had broken. And so they had this water emergency. So I had this nice steak dinner on paper plates and plastic cups and kind of plastic silverware. Fortunately, they did get that fixed, but I was told before I left that if they didn't get it fixed, they might have to close the park. That didn't happen. But that just shows that there's a huge backlog of maintenance problems, for a lot of the infrastructure of the parks. It's estimated $12 billion, something like that. We love our parks. We love them to death. But we're not really supporting what needs to happen to take care of all of the visitation that happens at our national parks.
Now, they do have employees, park rangers, mm-hmm. people who helped you going through Grand Canyon, even mm-hmm. after his shift, I mm-hmm. understand.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a local guy, Lance Gambrell. He went through the public history program in our history department, and now he's a permanent employee at the park. And because I knew him, he agreed to give me a tour of the West Rim. And we got there. There was still some people around. We watched the sunset. It was just very special. And he's a great guy.
So besides employees, do they need volunteers as well?
Boy, the parks wouldn't run without volunteers. Everywhere I turned, there was somebody, usually some retiree, who was doing vital work in interpretation. They were sitting in a room, and people would come in and they'd talk about, about the room, say at Fort Vancouver in Washington, or at Fort Clatsop, a retired school teacher pretended to be a sergeant in the Corps of Discovery with Lewis and Clark. Everywhere you go, there are volunteers, and the Park Service wouldn't be able to operate if they didn't have these volunteers.
Well, do you drive many hours, and who kept you company?
I did drive many hours. That's 7,000 miles in about 5 weeks. And who kept me company was NPR. NPR, I had books on tape, I had CDs, I even had XM radio, satellite radio. But where I kept turning to was that part of the dial where NPR had their stations, and I would listen to the news, I'd listen to music. For 3 hours driving through Oregon, I listened to the funeral for Muhammad Ali. I mean, it was just incredible. I was in heaven. So thank you, NPR, for being my companion on this Driven by History road trip.
You're going to have a third part to this. When are you leaving?
I'm leaving in a couple weeks at the end of July. And actually, this is the big part of the trip. I'm going to the East Coast. I'm going to go up all the way up to Boston. So from Las Cruces up Route 66 up to Albuquerque, and then Route 66 to Chicago, and then over through the upper Midwest, over to New York, and then Boston, down to New York, and then down the coast all the way maybe to Cape Canaveral in Florida, and then back through the South and through Texas. It's going to be a long trip, and I won't get through until November.
Well, hopefully we're going to be talking to you before November so you can tell us more about it. What are you looking forward to this third part of the trip?
I'm looking forward to parks that I've never been to, and the whole gamut of our history, from pre-contact Native American mounds in Ohio at Hopewell to contact sites between Europeans and Native Americans to the creation of our country through battles, say at Fort Stanwix or Saratoga, the Revolutionary battles, creation of our Constitution, the industrialization of our country in the 19th century. There's some wonderful sites, Erie Canal, Chesapeake and Ohio Canal, even Edison's laboratory in New Jersey. Civil War, of course, I'm going to be hitting some Civil War parks that I've never been to, from Fort Sumter to Appomattox and battles in between. This is, and then also I'll be just to kind of come up to the very current times. I'm going to also go to the Flight 93 National Memorial, the September 11th site in Pennsylvania where the airplane crashed. So I'll be going from pre-contact to very contemporary times.
So this you'll be starting in the beginning of August then,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and all through November, or are you coming back?
Well, it's hard to say when I'll be back. It's hard to say whether I'll stay out for longer than I plan or shorter than I plan. That's a long time to be on the road, but sometime in the beginning to middle of November.
So I look forward to hearing from you again and giving us another recap. But of course, you're putting up pictures and stories, and you just went to go see Rosie the Riveter.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
That's in the Bay Area. It's a wonderful site. It's where tens of thousands of people built Liberty ships, Victory ships, to help win the war during World War II. I got there, I just talked to the ranger, and she said, oh, you got to, before these two women leave, you got to talk to them. Well, these were women who were welders during World War II, and they volunteered there. They talked about their work. I talked to them for a few minutes, and I took a picture. I posted the picture on my blog at drivenbyhistory.blogspot.com, and it was just such a joy to talk to these women who lived history.
And you are living history and being absolutely a bridge, not just to this community, but to the entire nation.
Yeah, I have some followers. It's kind of fun to check out who's actually from around the world. I can see what countries are accessing my blog, and it's kind of fun to think about that.
Well, thank you so much for coming down to Puentes Bridges. Again, Dr. John Hunter, a New Mexico State University professor of history, who will be giving us another brief history lesson about our nation's parks, the centennial. It's the National Park Service centennial.
I'll call in about a month.
Thank you so much. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.